This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Hello, I'm Alex Smith. Many of us are just trying to get through another week, so it's inconvenient when a news story flashes by another big warning sign of developing climate catastrophe, and I mean that, a catastrophe. Apparently the ocean and all the creatures in it could eventually end up gasping for oxygen. The science is so new, the issue so underestimated, this September the Royal Society is hosting a series of presentations on this topic. The title is Ocean Ventilation and Deoxygenation in a Warming World. The meeting is organized by Professor John Shepherd and two associates. Shepherd is a British Earth System scientist, a professor at the University of Southampton, and a former director of the National Oceanography Center. He's a fellow of the Royal Society. Professor Shepherd, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi.
Hi. So why are you organizing this meeting of scientists in September 2016?
We are organizing the meeting because we think there is an emerging issue that is not well enough understood scientifically and whose practical implications are not yet well enough understood either. So this is one of a series of meetings that the Royal Society organizes, and we try and latch on to upcoming subjects that are not yet fully worked out, that are really emerging in the scientific community and beyond.
Good. Well, let's get to the basics. What is deoxygenation of the ocean?
The ocean contains oxygen. And most of the ocean is fairly well oxygenated. That's to say the oxygen level is about as high as it could be, bearing in mind the solubility of oxygen in seawater. And this, of course, is very important for animals, particularly. Plants, as I'm sure your listeners know, produce oxygen, but animals mostly use oxygen. And so the presence of oxygen, even in the deep ocean, is very important for marine ecosystems. But oxygen is used up by plants and bacteria, animals and bacteria, and so it isn't 100% saturation everywhere. There's an oxygen minimum zone pretty much everywhere in the world ocean, and there are some regions which have become anoxic. And there is evidence that these are spreading for various reasons. Historically, the biggest reason has been because of nutrient runoff from land, eutrophication, causing excessive plant production and dead matter falling to the sea floor where it uses up oxygen and creates anoxic zones, which may actually kill animals, although mostly they avoid such areas. So the level of oxygen in the ocean is important. And the new concern is that we have good reason to believe that global warming will also reduce oxygen levels in the ocean. And that's for two reasons. First reason is that most gases, including oxygen, are less soluble as the temperature warms up, which some people find surprising. It's the opposite of what you would expect with a solid compound, but for gases, that's the way it goes. And so as the ocean warms, we expect the dissolved level of oxygen to fall. But also, as the surface of the ocean warms, it becomes more highly stratified. That means we have lighter water on top of denser water. That makes it more difficult to mix down from the surface, which is where the oxygen is coming in. We expect reduced ventilation of oxygen into the ocean interior. So for both of these reasons, we think that progressive ocean warming is going to reduce oxygen levels. There is observational evidence that that is already happening in some places. So far, the effect is not big. We don't really know how big it's going to be in the long run or how serious that's going to be or how it's going to interact with the biological processes that already reduce oxygen in the ocean. And that's why we're having the meeting, to explore these various processes, the way they interact, and to try and begin to figure out what the possible consequences may be.
And do we know the time scale of significant changes? Are we talking decades, centuries, longer?
Decades through centuries, certainly. Some effects, as I say, have already been observed, and we expect these to build up progressively over several centuries. So we don't expect to reach any sort of new steady state in this respect. Even if we manage to stabilize global surface temperatures, the heat will continue to propagate down into the ocean for several centuries. So this is a very long-running issue and possibly a very long-term problem.
And what do the paleo records tell us? Has this loss of oxygen happened before in previous warming periods?
Yes, that's right. That's a very interesting issue. We know that studies of ocean sediments particularly show that in the past, back in the Cretaceous period, especially, let's say, about 100 million years ago, the ocean repeatedly became anoxic. At least the deepest layers where the sediments were laid down became anoxic and stayed that way for very long periods of time, hundreds of thousands, pushing up towards a million years at a time. And we don't know precisely why that happened. There are still conflicting theories about that. And we don't know how extensive those zones were or how they affected marine ecosystems, because we only have the fossil record to go on, and most of the life forms in the ocean don't fossilize very well. So we have a modern analog, interestingly, because the deeper regions of the Black Sea, deeper than about 500 meters, are anoxic at present and have been for a long time. And that is not necessarily catastrophic, because the surface of the Black Sea, the surface waters are still oxygenated and still support important fisheries and good functioning ecosystems. So nobody is, I hope, suggesting that this is global catastrophe looming and we're all doomed. But there is a potentially serious problem that we need to understand better. And understanding what happened in the past will help us to understand what happens in the future, we hope.
So these dead zones, yes, I've read about them for years, talked about them on this show, and it is generally ascribed to agricultural fertilizers or other land-based pollution. But could it be more than that? Is deoxygenation due to warming oceans perhaps already somewhat at play?
Well, as I said, there are observations that suggest that the ocean warming is already having an effect, but that's mainly in the deep ocean. In these coastal areas where we have the dead zones at present, the temperatures already fluctuate a great deal, and the global warming signal would be relatively small compared to the natural fluctuations. So although there probably is some small effect, it's unlikely to be comparable to the natural seasonal fluctuations and the effect of fertilizers and other nutrient-rich runoff. Where we do probably, we'll expect to see the signal first is in this oxygen minimum zone that I mentioned, which is typically a few hundred to a thousand meters down in the ocean. And we would expect to see that oxygen minimum level becoming lower and this zone to be thickening, and those are the sorts of observations that we would be looking for. And the advantage of looking there is that because the conditions are relatively stable, it will be easier to see the signal than in coastal waters where there's a lot of year-to-year and seasonal fluctuation.
So the public has heard a lot more about ocean acidification, a chemical change in the seas. Is that a completely different problem from oxygen depletion, or are these problems interrelated in some way?
They are slightly interrelated. Fundamentally, ocean acidification is a chemical problem. We mostly know that carbon dioxide is a weakly acidic gas. Forms a weak acid when it dissolves in water. And so simply putting carbon dioxide in the ocean is pretty much guaranteed to make it marginally more acidic, which is what we're observing, and we're still trying to understand fully what the ecological consequences of that will be. There is also an effect of temperature, because the various coefficients, chemical coefficients that control the level of acidity are temperature dependent. So there's an interaction between acidification and temperature. And in the same way, there's an interaction between temperature and oxygen. And there may be some small chemical effects of the oxygenation, deoxygenation itself, because that is changing the chemistry. It's not directly affecting acidity, but there are probably subtle effects going on. But again, we need to work through and figure out what all these interactions may be.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Professor John Shepherd, a distinguished scientist who's helping to organize a meeting of scientists this September. They'll discuss the threat of lower oxygen levels in the seas as the world warms. So, John Shepherd, you spent over a decade studying fish population dynamics. What do we know about the impacts of lower oxygen levels on sea life, like the fisheries?
Well, we know that the deoxygenated zones that exist already have an impact on fisheries. You do get fish kills occasionally, and we do observe fish avoiding these areas, understandably. They're capable of sensing whether there's enough oxygen for them to function properly, and they can swim away. Plankton, of course, can't swim away in the same way. And for this reason, there is some evidence that these deoxygenated zones do affect the reproduction of fish, because most fish have planktonic eggs and larvae in their early life stages. And these, of course, can't swim fast enough to get away from the deoxygenated zones. So if these happen to correspond with spawning or nursery areas, then you would expect a population level effect. And the fact that the adults can swim away is not going to prevent there being a problem. So far, these effects have not manifest themselves in terms of major fish population collapses, but that is always a possibility. It's not as worrying as it might otherwise be, because these oxygen minimum zones tend to be in areas of very high biological productivity. It's the high surface productivity and the export of biological material to the deep ocean, where the bacteria metabolize it, respire it, and use oxygen in the process. This high productivity is associated with the low oxygen zones deeper down. And the high productivity means that these are typically good areas for fish in the first place. I mean, a case in point might be off the coast of California or South Africa, where you have very productive ecosystems, areas of anoxia that appear to be expanding in a very episodic and uneven sort of way, but nevertheless do appear to be expanding. Whether there is an effect on fish in those areas, I'm not sure. You'd need to ask the experts on these fish stocks in those areas.
John, I know it's still early days, but are we studying a feedback system? Does ocean deoxygenation drive more loss of oxygen?
Not as far as I know. We are always worried about these feedback effects, and we do look for them. A feedback effect is also not necessarily catastrophic, because what it does is amplify the effects of external changes. It doesn't necessarily make them go into a chain reaction situation. But positive feedbacks are very important in climate science, where the climate sensitivity is enhanced very considerably by a number of positive feedbacks that we know about. So far as we know, in the case of deoxygenation, something we call Le Chatelier's principle applies. And that is to say that the chemical and biological systems tend to react in such a way as to oppose or reduce the imposed change rather than amplifying it. But having said that, I wouldn't rule out that there's a process that nobody has yet thought of that might cause a positive feedback. The ones that I know about at the moment are mostly negative feedbacks that tend to reduce the impact of external changes rather than amplify them.
Who are some of the scientists presenting at the September meeting of the Royal Society, and what will they talk about?
Okay, we have a star-studded list of people who've worked on various aspects of these problems. I mean, we have a couple of people from the Scripps Institution for Oceanography in California, Ralph Keeling, who is probably the foremost scientist in the world in measuring oxygen in the atmosphere and also in the oceans, as well as other things. He's opening the whole session with a talk on what we actually know about oxygen in the atmosphere and the oceans. And then we have Lisa Levin talking about the ecological consequences of deoxygenation on the continental margins. So exactly this problem of the low oxygen zones that we were talking about before. We have Laurent Bopp from France talking about modeling of oxygen in global ocean models, which is something which is not yet done as well as we would like it to be. Ocean models are, if anything, still less well developed than atmospheric models. There are a number of processes that we find hard to represent, and we have to parameterize. And so Laurent will be talking about how well are we doing in modeling oxygen in the oceans. Andreas Oschlies from Germany will be talking about the oxygen minimum zone in low latitudes, that's to say near the equator, where this zone comes close to the surface and is particularly intense because of the high biological production there. And Peter Brewer from the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute, also in California, will be talking about whether or not we are actually representing the interaction between the physical processes, the mixing processes, and the oxygen penetration into the ocean correctly, whether in fact there are basic chemical processes that we could represent better in our models. I'm not going to give you the whole long list, but let's finish up by saying we have Andy Watson from the University of Exeter in the UK, who will be talking about the whole process of regulation of these biologically active chemicals in the ocean, and in particular anoxia in the past, as we were discussing before, the past climate record, and in the present ocean, and how we can apply the information from the past to the present and the future.
How can people find out more about this meeting before the fact, and will there be some way to find out what happened?
Yes, you can find out more about it by going to the Royal Society's website, royalsociety.org, and if you look for scientific meetings and search for ventilation, you'll find the web pages that are devoted to this with a complete list of speakers and the schedule and the opportunity to register for the event, which is free if you can get yourself to London for a couple of days. Our meeting room can hold in excess of 100 people. We're hoping to fill it up. And you will be able to find out about it afterwards, because all the talks that are given are going to be written up and will appear in a special issue of one of the Royal Society's journals, Philosophical Transactions, which we believe is actually the longest-running scientific journal in the world. It's been going for about 350 years and still going strong, and making a speciality of theme issues on subjects like this that are of very general interest. So there's every opportunity to find out what's going on, either by being there or reading up about it afterwards.
Now, is there anything that I've missed that you would like to tell our listeners as we wrap up, John?
I think the thing I would like to stress is that this is an emerging issue scientifically. We don't yet fully understand the science. That's why we're having the meeting. We don't yet fully understand the ecological and socioeconomic consequences There is genuine cause for concern, very strong reasons to believe that there is an emerging problem, but as of yet we can't really say how big it is or how serious it's going to be. So watch this space. The scientific community is alerted to this problem and working on it fairly enthusiastically, and we hope to be able to tell your listeners and other people a lot more about it in the future.
The Royal Society is organizing a meeting of scientists this September to discuss ocean ventilation and deoxygenation in a warming world. Our guest is Professor John Shepherd from the University of Southampton. You can find links to the science, the meeting, and the subjects we've touched on in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Professor John Shepherd, thank you for sharing your time, and good luck with the meeting this fall.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.